If you negotiate with your knee before standing up, you're losing that argument. Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000 as in zero pain.
You guys not allowed. No, I'm just kidding.
My mentality was to go out and win at any cost.
Jordan is the most talented player in the NBA by far.
The show of the 90s, the team of the 90s.
How you feeling?
Whenever they speak Michael Jordan, they should speak Scottie Pippen.
We created an image that people want to live up to. I think that's all you can hope for.
No kidding. The Last Dance, says Phil Rosenthal in the Tribune, is exactly what fans need. It's both a perfect diversion and a tribute to shared sacrifice. It's a trip down memory lane, he wrote, peppered with forgotten details, such as the hard luck household from which Scottie Pippen emerged and who Scott Burrell was. Phil's on a phone line right now, who's lucky enough to have seen, I guess, half of this series so far. Is that right, Phil?
I've seen actually 8 of the 10 episodes, and the only reason I haven't seen the two, or the only reason I've been given, is the other two aren't finished yet.
Yeah,
they moved up the air dates for this thing. It was originally set for June, and then the world was turned upside down, and there was great outcry from fans to get this thing out, and they're doing the best they can.
Is it just one? Is it just? It's not all six teams. It's not the entirety of the Bulls' run. It's just a season or two.
Well, the spine of it is the 97-98. Final championship of Michael Jordan and the Bulls, the end of the second three championships in a row,
right,
from the 90s. But it covers the entire Jordan era, and at times goes back to, I think the earliest date I saw was 1968 with a young Michael Jordan. So you couldn't do one. I mean, you could, but it wouldn't be terribly interesting, perhaps, to do just that season. But it takes into account the totality of Michael Jordan and the Bulls.
And do I understand correctly, 2 episodes will air each Sunday evening, starting this Sunday night?
That is correct. It begins Sunday, ends, I think the final weekend is May 17th.
So I got 2 hours of sports I haven't seen starting Sunday night.
Well, you know, it is sports you haven't seen, but it is sports you have seen. I mean, you were around in those days. You're going to remember a lot of this. This is also going to jar loose things you didn't remember or maybe didn't notice the same way. That's part of what makes it so much fun and so interesting.
So what do we learn, or what are we reminded of? Let me guess that Jordan was a taskmaster and not as nice a guy as you might have hoped.
Well, yeah, and that was not a secret. It's just that it's funny. What I remember from covering the final three championships was that, you know, there was a lot of information out there, and the public just didn't want to hear it or disregarded it or downplayed it. You know, this was a guy who at one point, you know, in practice got so heated with Steve Curry punched him. You know, you don't think of that when you think of the Michael Jordan from the Gatorade ads or the McDonald's ads or the Chevy ads.
Or the Bob Green columns.
Oh, God.
Right.
Right. Man, he wrote a whole book on.
Yeah. And loved him.
What a saint he was.
And loved him. And loved him.
But, you know, people are more complex than all that. And I think what you get is as he says in a particularly moving passage, he says, you know, he didn't ask anything more of others than he asked of himself, but he asked an awful lot of himself. And he was unbending when it came to the standards he wanted to see upheld. And that became, you know, that not everybody can handle that so well.
Well, you know, we've all heard about the fact that he punched Steve Kerr. It's remarkable because he punched a teammate, and especially of all people, Steve Kerr. But do they go into what actually happened on the practice floor that day that got the two of them so angry at each other?
Yeah, Phil Jackson was calling a lot of. They were scrimmaging, and Phil Jackson was calling Michael for a bunch of fouls, and He said, look, you got to do something, and something wasn't getting done. And, you know, Steve was trying to hang in there, and Steve at one point sort of pushes him, and Michael hauls off and hits him, and almost immediately, you know, regrets it and realizes. But he, at the same time, as Steve Kerr points out, he appreciated that Steve didn't back down. But Steve held in there, and in some ways it strengthened their relationship. So and the respect they had among each other. So this is kind of at the core of Michael Jordan behind the scenes.
Phil Rosenthal's on a phone line from the Chicago Tribune. Of course, he's watched all of the available, that is to be seen, ESPN 10-part Last Dance documentary series. It's 10 parts. He's seen the first eight. In fact, the director was on with our Bob Surratt this morning, and he said, do you have the thing done yet? And he still doesn't, but he's got some more days to finish the editing. Is the most colorful person in there Dennis Rodman?
Well, physically with his hair, yeah. Everybody has their moment, you know. We go back to see Michael growing up and some of the things along the way en route to the championships that made him who he was and who, you know, how Jordan came about and Phil Jackson. And Rodman is in many ways the most interesting. I think some of his background is held until later in the sequence, but we know it from other documentaries and other things that happen. I think what you find is that it was the alchemy involved in putting this group together. Even Jerry Krause, who comes across oftentimes as a villain in this, the general manager of the team, who pretty much lit the fuse that ended up scattering them at the end of the 98 season. Even he is an interesting character in this, as a former White Sox scout who asked Jerry Reinsdorf, when he bought the Bulls, and he'd already owned the White Sox, but I asked him, could I be general manager? And everyone told Jerry, don't do it. And he did it anyway. There's no shortage of interesting people and interesting stories and in this 10-hour or, you know, each hour is actually 50 minutes if you take the commercials out. Yeah, there's no shortage of that in this story.
Yeah, no kidding. So we watched this final season of the 2 three-peats. Can you just kind of walk me through the season? Was it a foregone conclusion that the Bulls were going to be great and win it all that year?
Well, in one sense, yeah, I think that was the expectation. On the other hand, Scottie Pippen, who was very angry, he felt he was underpaid. He was the 122nd highest paid guy in the league, although he arguably was, you know, among the team, inarguably, he was among the league's elite players. He had signed a 7-year contract in 91, and it was in its last year, but he was very angry, and the Bulls were thinking of trading him. He had been injured in the playoffs the season before and held off on surgery, so he was not with the team early in the season. They went 0-4 in their first road games, and when they did finally win, it was against the lowly Clippers in double overtime, and mainly because Michael Jordan just got fed up and said, I'm going to make sure that we win this thing. And so it was a sluggish start from the beginning, and Dennis Rodman had to assume a different role. When Pippen comes back, Rodman is kind of a mess, and decides, you know what, I need 48 hours to get away. Goes off to Las Vegas and hangs out with Carmen Electra. They forget about he's going to lose track of time, and Michael Jordan has to go to Las Vegas to pull him out of the room. So as I say, there were these stumbling blocks along the way. Were they the best team in collective? Yeah, almost certainly. But you had a very strong team in Utah. You had other teams in the East that were going to give them trouble. Nobody gave them a free pass. They almost didn't make it to the NBA Finals. They went 7 games against Indiana, having won and escaped to get to the finals, but that could have gone awry. They didn't have home court, so the series began in Utah, not because they they had identical records, but Utah had won the tiebreaker.
Yeah.
So you have all this going on, and as a result, yes, in retrospect, this is what I'm talking about what you remember. You think of it as an inevitability. You think about it, but there was all this drama going on, and over it all was this certainty that Jerry Krause had told Phil Jackson, "I'm signing you this contract," but their relationship had frayed so much. He said, "You could go 82-0, and we'll still not bring you back next year." So, and Michael had said, "I'm not playing with the Bulls for another coach." And you had Pippen saying, "I got to get out of here because I'm underpaid, and nobody's going to put up with Rodman if you don't have the other pieces in place." So, basically, you're playing under the shadow, knowing this is it. It's now or never to get this thing done. So, yeah, we remember it as this sort of, yeah, of course they won it. And they were clearly the best team, but it was anything but a certainty in the moment. Yeah. Except that Michael Jordan was part of it. And Michael Jordan tended to do what he said he would do.
You know, I shared with our listeners when we were talking about the vivid dreams people are having these days because of the anxiety we're all living in. And for that matter, a doctor said because we're all just waking up more often, tossing and turning. And since you dream a lot at night, that's why our dreams seem to be more a part of our waking hours now. A backstory to the fact that I shared with our listeners, the fact that I had a dream that I was on the floor with Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan, and they were both pleading with me for the ball. And I knew that Scottie really wanted it, even though Michael needed it. And so I gave it to Scottie. I said, "I don't know much about basketball," but I passed to Pippen. And a friend of mine texted me right afterwards and said, "Oh, it's clear you don't know enough about basketball. You gave the ball to Pippen." Does the series dwell much on the love-hate relationship between those two?
Well, it comes across as more love than hate, but there is a bit of friction. There's friction in all the relationships. Yeah, it does deal with that. And speaking of Pippen and the ball, it deals with the moment in when Michael was playing baseball that Scottie Pippen said, "You know, if I'm not getting the ball, I'm not going out there for the end of the playoff game." Yeah. And it took Tony Kukoc to win it. For that matter, we're reminded that it isn't always Michael Jordan who wins these games. I mean, John Paxson's baskets came in at critical times at least a couple of the junctures in this run, and so, you know, that is, again, we think of it one way, but we don't completely understand. You know, I don't think, I'm not even sure in the moment we fully grasped exactly what we were seeing.
Sure.
But we had, there was no shortage of reporting on it and details that were out there.
I always thought for the Paxsons and Kerrs of the world, it must be almost more difficult to play on that team because those guys play at such a high level. If they give the ball to you, by God, you'd better make your shot. And, of course, they did. This is fun.
But that's the whole Michael Jordan mentality is you've got to be ready. You've got to be there because I need everyone around me to be playing at their absolute top level.
Phil Rosenthal writes about this in the Chicago Tribune. His review is favorable, can you tell? And the series starts Sunday night on ESPN. Nice to hear you, Phil. Anxious to see you again someday, but you stay well, my friend.
You too. And, you know, it'd be nice to see anybody, but especially you, John.
You say that to all the hosts. Thanks, Phil.